Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. It's simple, really. You either want to grow in virtue and holiness, or you want to be a sissy, whiny baby. If you choose to move forward, grab your whiskey glass, because the Catholic Man Show is starting right now.
So raise your glass. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles in studio. We are Facebook Live. We are Periscope Twitter Live. Let me just say something really fast. Can I? Oh, that camera's not on. Because we had to reset it, remember? So you don't get a camera this time.
No. You don't.
Oh, I don't. I don't get a camera this time. That's okay. can I just say something, though, really fast about Facebook, Twitter, all this stuff?
Yeah.
A guy I was working with today came in and was like, hey, what's this? Can you sign me up for maybe this this FaceSnap stuff? And I'm like, listen, man, I know that you're older. I know you're older, but you know what you know what it is. You know it's Facebook.
Right.
Like, stop. Don't, yeah, stop.
Don't do that.
You're not fooling me.
Right.
Like, you know, maybe 11 years ago, okay, you'd get me. Five
right.
years ago,
yeah,
you would get me. But you know what Facebook is now. Like, anyway, we people who are older than 55, we know that you know it's Facebook. We know.
I know that you
I
know,
know
this.
That you know this, so... You can call it Facebook.
Right.
So we are Facebook Live.
That's funny.
So anyway, welcome to the Catholic Man Show. I'm really excited about our man beverage today.
Me too.
This has been a crazy week. We had to rescheduled the Catholic Man Show to today.
Yes.
We had meetings today for the radio station, which was exciting. And then the 40 Days for Life kickoff started today, tonight.
Opening rally. So
opening
it
rally
starts tomorrow.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah, the official day is Wednesday.
Okay.
But we have the opening rally
tonight.
Tonight.
Had it tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we were there. It was a great turnout. Well, how many people did you say? 150?
Yeah, I think it could have been 200.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
Was there. Then we ran back home, got our kids to bed, and here we are on Facebook.
With you
on the Catholic Man Show. So today... Our man beverage is a sour beer, and it's brought to you by a Council of Man member and friend of ours from Tulsa, Mr. Watson, Nate Watson. And he gave us this beer that he brewed, and he brewed it for had it aged in a wine barrel for 3 years.
3 years.
For 3 years.
I am very excited about this beer. He brought a beer... And he left before we got to drink it. I was mortified that he left. Nate, the fact that you weren't there. He brought another sour beer to the wiffle ball tournament a few weeks back. And this is not as extreme of a statement as it may sound, because I haven't had very many sour beers. My sour beer experience is very low, but it was the best one I'd ever had. Because a lot of sour beer, sour in general is not my flavor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But he brought, it was just, the sour was just kind of like nice there in the background. It wasn't the main feature of the drink. You know what I mean? So it was just, I loved every second about it. But there's something about the sourness that creates a refreshing experience.
Yeah, so he gave this to us quite a while back ago, but I've been wanting to try my best to try a bunch of different sours before having this beer.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because I like you, are not a sour aficionado, like sour beer aficionado.
And I don't think most people
It's an acquired taste.
And it's kind of the back corner of the beer realm. You know, a lot of people are hanging out in the beer room for a long time before they realize, hey, there's sours.
Right, yeah.
And then some people fall in love with them head over heels. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of people who just don't like sour stuff in general.
Right.
You know?
And it's brewed differently. A little bit different. I did a little quick research on it, but we can talk about that. But let's
more than I do.
Let's try this out.
You got your church key. Yep.
I'll let you pour your first glass.
How about
pour the first glass?
How about I pour yours, my friend?
Okay. So it's very interesting. Sour beers. I think that it is definitely an acquired taste. It's something
with half a glass.
That'll be good. It is something that you have to continue trying over time.
I will tell you, the first sour beer I had, did not like.
You were not a fan?
No. But I was drinking with Father Brian Ketterer and then one of his secular friends.
Let me ask you this, though. The first IPA that you had?
No, didn't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
And now you like
it? Yes. And I realized that when I was drinking it, that just keep trying it. And even by the end of the glass, I was already getting acclimated to it, and I was able to enjoy it more.
Right.
Because the first few sips just were, they kind of shock me a little bit. Just because it's an upfront flavor, but let's try it.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
So as you can see, if you're on YouTube or streaming live watching us, you can see it's a darker, multi-caramel color.
Yeah, it is. It is a dark for a sour beer. This is exactly what a sour beer, this is what sour beer tastes like right here.
Yeah, because he told us that he was very worried, he was concerned that it was going to be, he's like,
really sour.
Let me tell you, it's going to be really sour.
This one's pretty sour.
It is really sour, but it's not.
Much more than the one he brought the other day.
Yeah, but it's not like overpowering.
No, it's not. And I had one recently that was terrible.
Really?
Oh, it was just nothing. It tasted like I was drinking a Warhead. Remember that candy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it just wasn't, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe that's a really good one. And like I said, I'm wrong. But to me, it was no good.
It was not good?
No.
So there's two different ways.
This, though, is not that. This is much. No, this is good.
It's very good. And you can definitely taste the Chardonnay wine.
Oh, is that what it was?
It's Chardonnay.
Oh.
And can you taste that? It tastes. You have that hint of Chardonnay.
I was expecting a red wine.
No, it was
a white wine.
I believe it's Chardonnay.
Interesting.
So there's two different ways of making sour beer.
Do they age? Do they always age Chardonnay in a barrel?
I think they can't.
Like when I think about barrels, I don't think of wine barrels. You know what I mean?
Right.
I guess they can. Yeah, I guess they can. Or maybe it's just. They aged it in a barrel, and then they took that barrel and.
So there's two different ways of making sour beers, and I only know of the one way. I don't understand the other way because it started getting too. The vocab was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, too deep.
Too deep. But so what they do is they take most beers now are very single yeasts. Like they've broken it down to like one particle of yeast, and they're using that specimen of yeast.
Okay.
Yeast. That's not the correct terminology, but you understand what I'm saying.
Okay. One kind of yeast. One species.
Maybe species.
Okay.
Of yeast, and that's what they use to keep it consistent. It reacts the same way every single time.
Okay.
So they do that in metal barrel, like stainless steel barrels, and then they take it and they use a bunch of different kinds of yeast that.
Okay.
Just goes crazy. And that's actually how they used to make beer. It was never like with single whatever yeast. It was multi kinds of yeast.
Okay.
And then, so they put them in these barrels and they throw the yeast, they throw this other yeast in there and then it just kind of lactates a lot. There's a lot of lactic acid, which creates the sour. It's the same kind of lactic acid in like yogurt and sauerkraut that makes it kind of that tangy.
Yeah, taste. That is kind of what it tastes like.
It's the same stuff.
I wonder if same this particle. Beer is a probiotic.
They have probiotic. They make sour beers with probiotics.
Honey, just need to get my probiotics in for the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's 12% alcohol.
So they put them in these barrels, and then they put fruits in the barrels. But it can't be filled up all the way because it has to have oxygen to be able to to move around.
That makes sense.
To ferment and do all this crazy stuff. It typically takes the first 6 months or so is very tart, and a year to 18 months creates more of the sour, and then at the very end, you get more of the fruit, tangy yet refreshing taste.
Hmm.
But it's very hard to make it keep it consistent. So a lot of times what they'll do is
because it's a long process for something to happen.
Well, yeah, and you're using all these multi kinds of yeast, and they react differently. It's an uncontrolled process, basically.
Yeah.
And so what they'll do is they'll make like 60 barrels, and then they'll use 40 of them, and then kind of blend them all together to create more of a consistent sour beer.
Okay, good idea.
And so, you know, a third of them are like, we're so inconsistent and so out there that it was like, we can't even use these.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of how, that's why I want to enjoy sour beers, because it is a craft. It is an art. You know, it's this labor of love. It takes a long time. It's not always consistent. There takes a little bit of luck, but also a lot of skill involved as well.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of brewing sour beers, and I like the process, and like, you know, it's kind of like smoking meat, right? You can take a brisket and throw it in the oven, and it's going to taste great. But you can take a brisket and smoke it on the grill, and it takes 9 hours.
Yeah.
But it's that anticipation, the buildup, the excitement of it's going to taste, you know, what could it taste like? Anyway, that's why I like the idea of sour beers.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I hope to enjoy it more. I hope to enjoy them more and become quite, like, acquainted with them more.
You have a lifetime, my friend.
Excited. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We are in studio today. We're drinking a delicious sour beer. It is. See, this is just my personal preference. I think it's a little bit more sour than I would make a beer. But comparing it to other sour beers that I've had that I know are good because Father Brian Ketterer is drinking them.
Right.
This is a good one.
This is I'm enjoying it. I'm very much enjoying it. It's going to be a beer that I'm going to continue to it's going to help me move towards liking sours more.
Yeah. And you know what else?
Dude, you haven't even given him a cheers. You haven't even toasted.
Why don't you do it, cuz he gave it to you.
Nathan, may your faith continue to grow and never sour, and may your family continue growing closer to our Lord from now until the end of time. Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. That was a good one. May it never sour.
Ba-da-tsh. Okay, let's...
I liked it.
Thank you. Let's get into the man gear.
But one thing I wanted to say about this sour beer...
Okay.
You can... It's difficult to drink a sour beer quickly.
That is true.
The sourness makes you slow down
and enjoy
it, kind of built-in moderator for your beer drinking,
which is always a good thing.
I agree.
Virtue. I agree. Virtue, gentlemen.
Okay. So, the man gear for today,
yes,
is pre-emergent.
Dave, what do you mean by pre-emergent?
Well, if you're from Oklahoma, it's just pre-emergent.
Pre-emergent.
I put out my pre-emergent.
Yeah.
But if you spell pre-emergent in Facebook or on Google, it says, did you mean pre-emergent?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Okay, so
that is what I meant.
We're a little bit late. I have not put down my pre-emergent yet. I'm a little bit late for this part of the area.
Yeah.
A lot of people think about pre-emergent as a spring gig.
Well, what is it? You haven't even said what it is.
Okay, you're right. Pre-emergent is the stuff that looks like fertilizer that you put down in your yard that prevents the weeds from growing. And that's only, in layman's terms, correct. Actually, what it prevents is the weeds from germinating. from taking root. So if there are already weeds in your yard and you put down pre-emergent, it's not going to do anything to those weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-emergent will stop new plants from taking root. Okay, it forms a barrier, essentially, on your over your dirt, so that new seeds, when they hit the dirt, they can't grow.
Okay.
And so, in the spring and in the fall, there are typically, depending on what part of the country you live in, there are spring weeds, and then there are fall weeds. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the spring weeds tend to be more your crabgrass. Your fall weeds tend to be more your dandelions, and you know they're just a different they're different genres. And once again, that just depends on what part of the country you live in. Florida and North Dakota have different stuff. So you need to know what is appropriate for your area.
Mm-hmm.
And in Florida, it might not be even the window to put down pre-emergent yet. In North Dakota, I don't know. I don't even know if they have grass in North Dakota.
I've never been there. But I would be willing to bet they probably have grass.
For all I know, they just mow the snow all summer long. I do not. I know that they don't do that. Please don't send me emails. I'm just kidding. Okay, but what my point is, the weeds are different. Okay,
right.
Here in Oklahoma, I can tell you that you want to really put it down pre-emergent mid-August to somewhere around the 10th of September.
Okay,
which seemed to be the general consensus early September. So it's kind of late September. I'm going to do it this weekend.
But it really depends on the weather, right? Because it's whenever it starts cooling off a little bit, that's when you want to do it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to do it whenever it's 100 degrees outside. In Oklahoma, in the summer times, you can still, or even in September, it can still be 100 degrees.
Sure.
That's not the time to do pre-emergent, right?
Right. Yeah. And so that really is what the big factor is. When is the ground going to start to cool down? Which is what allows those fall weeds to germinate. Now, a lot of the weeds that you see in the spring germinate in the fall, take root, but they don't come up until the spring. And so people can't figure out, I put down a pre-emergent every spring at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I still keep? Well, that's because they're fall weeds that haven't shown up yet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple rules. Couple things you don't want to combine. For instance, it's a waste of your time and efforts if you put down a pre-emergent and then attempt to overseed your yard. Because if you have a nice, like you have a nice fescue yard,
right?
Okay. Fescue is the kind of thing that you very often want to overseed. In fact, you kind of need to.
You have to.
Yeah. Because it won't spread in the same way that I have Bermuda. It will grow and spread. It'll just take over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, it'll do it all by itself, no problem. So if you're going to be overseeding your yard in the fall, which is a good time to do it,
right,
don't put down a pre-emergent, because if you do, it prevents the seeds from germinating.
Right.
So you're laying all this seed, but you've already put down a barrier.
That's going to prevent it from growing.
Right. Exactly. So you have to decide what your yard needs. Maybe if we had a mild summer and your fescue still looks really good.
Right now mine's not looking great because with fescue, man, you have to water it
all the time.
Every day.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma weather, every day. And when I'm out of town and I just have not been watering it as religiously as I should be.
Right. So you might say, we had a mild summer. My yard still looks great. This year I'll put down a pre-emergent.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at most years you overseed. You know, you gotta feel out your own yard.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about why it's important to take care of your yard.
Well,
because that,
for me personally.
Because there's okay.
Let's talk maybe theologically and then personally.
Okay.
On the subject. I would like to start personally. I love the look. When you finish mowing your yard,
mm-hmm.
It looks gorgeous.
With a good edge job.
Thank you.
The edge job has to be there.
Right. In fact, if all you do is edge it,
it
looks great.
Yeah, it looks good.
It doesn't have that.
It's almost like if you don't wash your car, but you wash your wheels and blacken the tires.
Sure.
Okay, it looks pretty good.
Yeah. Polish the headlights.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just the touch, you know, little touches that make it sparkle and shine just a little bit.
Yeah. I think they get the analogy. Let's move on.
But mowing it, you know, gives that nice, even, golf course looking effect. It is just so beautiful. So, personally,
there's a sense of accomplishment.
Yes. I feel like the house is in order. Mm-hmm. When I have a well-maintained
Jordan Peterson deal, where it's like, you know, clean your room, you know, because you feel ordered, you feel like you're in order, you feel like that you can, that's something that you can control.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do the things that you can control well, then your house is in order, you know, your life becomes more in order.
Yeah. And it's sort of like virtue, how one good act begets another. How when you practice one virtue, all of a sudden you start practicing other virtues. If you maintain your yard, the next thing here's what happened to me is I started taking care of my yard. The next thing I knew, I was also taking care of the flower beds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, flowers and dudes, you know, like let the chicks handle the flowers, right? You know, that was the stereotypical me of days gone by.
Yeah.
I would never say anything. Yeah,
that was the dumb Dave.
Gender insensitive today.
Right.
Ever. Right. But really, that's what happened. It's like now I, you know, water the flowers, I take, and it kind of works its way into the other aspects of your life, having a good maintained yard. What made the biggest difference for me this year was just getting weed killer. And a couple times a week, I'd get home from work and just walk the yard, spray the weeds.
Yeah.
And my yard, if I may say so, looks very good right
now. It does. It does. I agree with you.
So I'm a little late on the pre-emergent. Better late than never. At some point, if the seeds have already germinated, then you can put it down and it's not going to do anything because the seeds are already taken root. And you just, if that's the case, well, maybe you blocked some.
Weed killer is what you're going to have to use.
You just have to go get some more weed killer. You can go to
theologically.
Okay, so theologically, I would say that the way I like to look at it is that my house is a gift from God, just like everything else that I have, just like my children.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my children are my children, they're really God. They're his children first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I, in a way, I'm the steward of everything that's been given to me. Just like there was a steward in the Old Testament. When the king is gone, the steward is in charge. It's his city. And he held the keys to the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
There's the king and the steward, only people with the keys. Okay. So they have the authority. So in some way, my house, I'm the steward of, not necessarily the owner, because I would have nothing if it were not given to me from our Lord. So if that's the case, and the things I have really belong to him first, I want to take care of them in order to honor them because they're his. So if I have a nice house, I want to have a nice house in order that the Lord's house he has given me is well taken care of. You know, if you give someone a gift and they just throw it on the floor, they don't take care of it, it gets beaten up, that's disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So when you give someone a gift, you want them to honor it, cherish it, take care of it. And so that's why I think, just one reason why having a good yard, having a nice, beautiful lawn is a very important thing to do.
Well done.
Thank you.
When we get back, we're going to jump into the man topic. Drinking some sour beer, talking about pre-emergent.
Pre-emergent.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Here on the Catholic Man Show, we try to promote virtue. I would say virtue is what we try to promote every episode in some way, shape, or form. We're going to talk about a specific virtue today. We haven't talked about this virtue yet, and one of the reasons why I have not brought this up as a topic is because it's a very hard word to say. We're going to be talking about magnanimity.
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 What's the word that on Nemo where the little fish continues to...
Oh, yes. It is... Dang it.
Whatever it is.
My wife was just making us say this at dinner 3 days ago. Anonymity.
What?
Anonymity.
Anonymity?
They live in a sea anemone.
Oh, okay.
It's a sea anemone.
Anyway, that's what it reminds me of with magnanimity.
And she was trying to say if we could see, say, she was trying to see if we could say enemy anemone.
Okay.
Can you say?
We're talking about magnanimity today.
Yes.
Dave, this is kind of your topic you wanted to.
Yeah. So
how do you want to start it out?
I think the word, you know, people like refer, everyone has heard of people being referred to as magnanimous.
I was under the impression that everybody had heard.
Yes. No! Don't start that. And I think, myself included, most of my life, I thought, that's just a really nice thing to say to someone. It's a big word. It sounds great. People don't say it a whole lot. It must mean a lot if you say someone is magnanimous. Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's all it was to me.
Okay.
I had no concept of magnanimity as a virtue, nor did I really know the true definition.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that's a good place to start. No matter what, first define your terms.
Yes.
Okay. Magnanimity is defined as greatness of soul. So two parts, mm-hmm. magna.
Or like meaning, great spirit.
Yeah, exactly. So magna.
Great.
That means great, you know, like the Magna Carta.
Mm-hmm.
Nimity means spirit, soul.
Mm-hmm.
So great soul, large souledness.
Large souledness.
Solidness.
Okay.
Is a word okay. that I think deserves more street cred.
Okay.
Okay. It doesn't get a lot of respect.
I can see why.
In the word world. So what does that mean? Greatness of soul.
Right.
To me, that's a weird definition because I think for us, that's the definition Thomas Aquinas uses. I don't know if that's his own original definition
mm-hmm.
Or if that was common in his time. But certainly when he talks about the soul, he's very philosophic, very specific.
Yes.
You know, he would distinguish between the spirit and the soul. For me, I have heard the difference before. I forget what they are.
Yeah.
And most people view them as the same, even though philosophically there's a difference. So when we say greatness of soul, I think that's kind of lost on us today. Because, well, what is that? We don't really talk about the soul, the powers of the soul, or you know what I mean?
I mean, what I struggled with whenever I was learning about what magnanimity was... At first glance, I was thinking like, well, it almost sounds very prideful. It almost sounds like, how is this a virtue? Because
right.
it's talking about like, we're called for greatness. We're called to be, you know, it's the understanding of knowing that we are made for glory. We're made to do great things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a more practical definition is having the habit of doing things worthy of honor. Okay. But not for honor's sake, but because
right.
they are honorable things to do.
Right. Yeah, and it's doing great things.
Right.
It's not just doing, like, it's not doing small, I mean, you can do small things with great love, I guess, like St.
Yeah.
Teresa.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which would be considered a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so in the Summa, St. Thomas Aquinas, there's one question he asks is magnanimity the opposite of meanness? And what he meant by meanness was something being small. You know, things are grand or mean.
Oh, okay.
And so he meant littleness.
Okay.
In that case, and he ends up saying no, that meanness is not the opposite of magnanimity because a magnanimous act could be a small act. So it's not necessarily.
So would it be
something...
just a prideful act? Would the opposite be
or ambitious? He says ambitious.
Which that term would be different than how we probably
right.
use it
See,
today.
See, once again, because people view ambition as a good thing
right.
very often.
Right.
Which
it can be a good thing.
Yeah. Words change. Okay.
Right.
And so
right.
that's one of the good things about having Latin in our church is that the way things are defined, when they're defined in Latin,
mm-hmm.
never change. okay?
Right.
Because it's a dead language. I mean, that really right. is a benefit. So, yeah, when he uses ambition, it's sort of like seeking things beyond your abilities, trying to achieve greater things than what you can actually do.
Okay.
For the sake of
or achieving great things,
yourself.
Thinking that it's you that's doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. This is something that we have time. Good. I want to get your thoughts on this, because this is something I pulled up and I thought this hits me hard.
Okay.
We'll see what you say. It says, magnanimous men don't allow themselves to become concerned with everything that comes along, but rather only the great things that are suitable for him.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I've struggled with, especially recently, man, with everything that's going on in the church, with all these breaking headlines. It's who's saying what now? I absorb myself kind of in a lot of things that don't concern me.
Mm-hmm.
And aren't building me up to do, you know, continue doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
I don't have, like, I'm struggling with probably the virtue of being able to say, nope, those aren't my thing. You know, it's almost like temperance, almost like I'm not tempering myself from things that don't really pertain to what my state in life.
Right. So, it sort of like some of the other virtues we've talked about where you only have so much time in the day. So right. it's not that you might be doing something that's good. Okay. Help me out if you can think of an example, but is that the greatest good? That
so I can think of one.
Okay.
I've been emailing a guy about some philosophical questions that I've had.
Okay.
And this guy is a well-known guy. He's people know him. And so I've been emailing him because he's one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Well, eventually he said, like, listen, Adam, I can't continue answering your questions because it's taking a time away from me writing things that I'm supposed to be writing.
Yeah.
Now, he could answer those. He could take the time to answer those questions, and it would still be a good thing, but that's not the best thing that he could be doing at that time.
Come on, Pope Benedict. What else are you doing? Right?
That is not what I was implying.
That's not the guy that you were emailing?
That was not what I was implying. Okay.
You don't have his email address?
I do not.
Right. So, but that's exactly right. So I think the magnanimous man, he is going to use his resources wisely. In this case, and what you were bringing up, the resource of time.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of good things you can do with your time. But
what is the greatest good?
Yeah, so the virtue of magnanimity mm-hmm. seeks to do the greatest thing right. that you can do with your time.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be something that we all are going to struggle with at some point in time whenever we are faced with the final judgment.
Yeah.
You know, because God's going to say, I gave you this time, and look what you did with it.
Yeah.
Look how unproductive you were with this time. And that's something I struggle with.
Yeah.
I think probably all of us do it in some capacity.
So I know that St. Thomas Aquinas says you grow in all virtues simultaneously. When you practice one, you grow in all of them.
Right.
And I'm not going to question him on that. It just seems...
Good.
Right. It seems more practically, though, that you can work on them one at a time and you can get better at one. And then you get better at another one.
Sure, but grace builds on nature.
I understand.
Right.
It just seems that way to me.
Okay.
You know, whether that's true or not, there are a few prerequisites almost in order to practice magnanimity that St. Thomas Aquinas, he says you need humility. And you need hope. And I think faith was the other one. You need humility so that you do not attempt to do something that is greater than what you have the capacity to achieve. Okay, so the magnanimous man does not attempt things that he understands are beyond his abilities. Okay?
I think that's, yeah, okay.
You need hope for that the great things that you do attempt, you have to have hope that they will indeed come to fruition. And you need faith that God will bring them.
That his will be done.
I think faith was the last one. There was a third one. But, you know, there's these other virtues. The point is that there's these other virtues that come and play the role. Once again, prudence is always at the helm
mm-hmm.
of all the virtues. It guides. You cannot be magnanimous if you have no prudence.
Right.
Because otherwise you wouldn't have the ability to choose the right virtue at the right time. And I think that's kind of what makes you magnanimous, is that you choose the right virtue. You know, you're able to identify this is really the correct thing
to do.
It has to do
a lot with knowing thyself. We talk about knowing thyself on the Catholic Man Show quite a bit, and the importance of making sure to know your strengths and your weaknesses, and having a daily examination of conscience, and, like, you know, being able to know what your faults are.
Right.
And I think that the virtue of magnanimity would play a role into knowing thyself, because you have to know what you are good at and what you are called to do, your vocations, living out your vocations first and foremost, and then everything else falls into place.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Sweet. We both agree at the end of a segment, which is always a great thing. We'll be right back. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're drinking a sour beer, a delicious home-brewed sour beer from our main man, Nate Watson. Thanks, Nate. We're talking about magnanimity. What was I going to say about magnanimity? Oh, just saying the word is a magnanimous act. It was much funnier if you had been on Facebook and heard me say it the first time.
And you even said,
I forgot what I was going to say. I said, it's going to be funnier the second time. Totally wasn't. It's okay. Hey,
yeah, sometimes you just keep swinging. You play in traffic, eventually you'll get hit.
Sometimes I want to be serious, okay?
I understand.
Not a joke. You know what? I don't know if you can see it. You can't see it. I have.
You have to talk into the mic, though.
I have. I'm wearing my pro-life button.
Very good. So we're talking about...
I wanted to show it off, but I realized it's hiding.
Is that a magnanimous act to be showing it off?
Yes, I want to show off.
Yeah.
I want to show off my magnanimity.
So we're talking about magnanimity today, the virtue of magnanimity. A magnanimous... Oh, man, I was the first one to mess up. A magnanimous heart...
Oh, you did it wrong again. Magnanimous.
Magnanimous. Magnanimous.
Magnanimous.
Magnanimous.
There you go.
There it is. There it is. is one.
You did pretty. We made it pretty far.
We made it really far.
I agree.
That was pretty good. It does not. I lost my train of thought. I lost my train of thought. Okay, but it's a guy who does not complain, because he does not allow his heart to worry about lesser things. And so it's an understanding of knowing that, you know, it's a call to greatness. It's a call to do great things. And so you can't complain, because whatever happens, you know, in your life, is you worry about your day-to-day things. Mother Angelica talked about all the time. They asked her, like, how are you able to run this station and this convent, build this monastery? Like, how are you able to do all these things at one time? You know, and she said that she lives every second, you know, for every second. You know, as soon as something else happens, she completely disregards it and gives it to the Lord and moves on.
She was good at giving stuff to the Lord.
She was really good at,
you know, like when EW10 would have a big bill, one of her sisters would come to her and say, hey, we got to pay this $50,000 bill today. And she would say, why are you telling me? Yeah. Go tell Jesus.
Yeah.
And then she'd send him to adoration to go tell Jesus about it. And then it would apparently that works. Worked. Bills got paid. EW10 is still around.
Right. She also had, like, the Lord appear to her.
I know. Yeah.
But we're all called to greatness. We're all called to great things.
But you know what? Speaking of money, St. Thomas says that if you have means, financial means, it is easier to be magnanimous.
Because you can do more? Much is given, much is expected.
Kind of. He gave a couple reasons. One of the reasons is that simply wealthy people are given more honor. And so magnanimity is not just about doing things worthy of honor. It's what you do with the honor that you're given. Okay?
So if you absorb it yourself, that's not magnanimous.
Right, yeah. So Also, another thing that he did was talk about the vices opposed to the virtue of magnanimity. And one of them, I believe it was under ambition, but he made the comment that if you do not attribute all of the honor that you receive to the Lord, then that is a sin. And I that would be the sin of ambition. Mm. I'm pretty sure that's correct. And so, yes, part of receiving this honor is that you have the correct mind and the correct understanding.
You always give it back to the...
Yeah, that it is not me who is really deserving of these honors, but it is Christ who has given me these things. It reminds me of Bishop Sheen. The story, you know, when someone, you know, said, oh, you're such a great speaker. And he said, yes, I am. You're right. I don't know if it's someone commenting about it or what, but you know, if he were to have said, "Oh no, I'm not,"
that's false humility.
Yeah, that's false humility. No, a true humility recognizes the gifts that you have, and you know, in this case, he is a great speaker. He understands that, but the important thing is that he also understands it's a gift that has been given to him from God. It's not something that he, you know, dragged out of himself, you know, pulled himself up by his own bootstraps.
Right.
And so that is a part of magnanimity in, you know, similar to humility.
Yeah, it's anytime I guess you probably go inward with everything, like thinking it's me that's doing it. I look at what all I've accomplished. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's that's direct opposition to the virtue.
Right.
Anytime it's outward, that would probably be a better thing. Let me ask you this, because I pulled this up and I have no idea where it came from, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Okay.
I think it's very relevant to specifically today and with abortion, with 40 Days for Life that's just coming out. So it says, to be silent out of fear for what is true is a man who is completely alienated to the virtue of magnanimity.
To be silent out of fear for what is true is to be completely alienated the virtue of magnanimity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
So, to not stand up for what is true, right. Meaning to not stand up for what is like for to be pro-life, to not stand up for the weak, for the hungry, for the poor, for to not stand up for your brother, to not stand up for your family, to not.
So you're not afraid of what is true, but to not stand up out of fear. To not stand up out of fear for what is true. So, in other words, to not stand up for what is true out of fear. I think maybe a better way to say it.
Yeah. And thinking like, oh, what are they going to think of me?
Right.
You know, is my reputation going to be damaged? Is the honor that I've been given like going to be taken away?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are they going to stop listening to the podcast?
The magnanimous man cares, even though he's doing things worthy of honor, he cares not for the honor in and of itself. You know, so if it were to be stripped away, he would care nothing of it because that was not his motivating factor in the first place. Magnanimity is a sub-virtue. Do you know of what?
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that.
It is a sub-virtue. It is also a special
fortitude?
Virtue. Yes.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Nice. Did you read that or did
no.
you? No. You dug deep and received a
grace.
A locution from the Lord.
Thank you, Lord. The Lord gave that to me.
An allocution. He spoke to you.
Yeah. I would say fortitude.
That is correct.
How many points?
I award you 1,071 points.
Nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But, you know, today...
I'm impressed that you got that. I really am.
Thank you.
Because that is not what is obvious. And I read it a few times when he talks about this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay, I'll just trust you.
Well... So today
I do that a lot with St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? I just believe you.
Yeah.
I don't even know why.
But today there's all these moral virtues. Morality is being under attack, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And we need men to stand up and say, no, there are absolute truths.
Right.
You know, there, you know, Jesus Christ did come down on this earth. God did become man. He did die for our sins. He did resurrect from the dead. You know, there's things that are being attacked all over the place. I mean, Trent Horn just did a podcast or a debate with a guy talking about whether or not there is a Christian God. I mean, it's becoming more and more, that side is becoming more and more popular.
Yeah.
And it's because they're loud. You know, it's because
they're so loud. They're, and it's, you know why? It's because no one will tell them. No one will speak up.
Right.
Everyone is afraid to speak up. And so silence, is, you know, like by not speaking up, you're kind of indirectly affirming them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
You just, we just need to stop that.
Well, and that would be exercising the virtue of magnanimity.
Yes, I agree. That is good. And that would be something that you have to have guts. I think it takes guts to be magnanimous.
It takes a backbone.
It takes a real man.
Right.
And none of this like weak-wristed handshake kind of man.
Right.
I'm talking about.
But I mean, I think that obviously the only way that develops is over time of doing the small things.
Practicing the virtues.
Yeah, right. Practicing the virtues.
You grow in the other virtues. You grow in magnanimity. You become magnanimous.
It says, Joseph Pieper.
Okay, yes. I like this guy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. When explaining magnanimity, he says, expansion, it is the expansion of the spirit towards great things, like we've talked about.
Uh-huh.
And he said, one who expects great things of himself and makes it himself worthy of it is magnanimous.
And makes himself worthy of it. Mm-hmm. I like that. That is a key part.
Right. So I would say arming yourself to make yourself worthy. You know, adoration is a big part. Maybe daily mass, making sure that you're frequenting the sacraments,
mm-hmm.
To receive these graces to do these things. We're all called to do them. We're all called to be saints. You know, that's the end goal here, right? We're all called to be saints.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way we're going to be able to do that is through the grace of God. And God has given us all these avenues to receive his grace through the sacraments, through adoration, through prayer, you know, and you have to be able to build that up in order to do these great things.
Yeah. You know what I find very helpful is reflection, you know, making that self-examination,
knowing thyself,
and not even just that, but reflecting on external situations. You know, you hear about somebody else, oh, this happened to them, or, you know, someone tells you a story, like, on the way here, I saw a guy. And he was, you know, yelling at his girlfriend, you know, like whatever. Just put yourself in that situation and think to yourself, what would I do if I encountered that? Because what's happened to me before is something starts happening and I panic. I don't know what to do. And later,
you ever thought of that?
Later, I think back and say, well, I wish I had acted.
Right.
And being prepared, I think, makes you more magnanimous.
Yes. Anyway, Nathan Watson, thank you so much for giving us this beer. Talk about pre-emergent. And we've talked about the virtue of magnanimity. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus. Jesus.